This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. This is the morning round on BFM 89.9. I'm Koo Soo Chuang, joined by Philip C and Wong Xiaoneng. In about a quarter of an hour, we'll break down the 15 billion ringgit per my ad package, aid package, announced yesterday with Lawrence Todd of Ideas. But before that, markets.
Well, the US was closed due to Martin Luther King Day. Asian markets, Nikkei was down 1%, Hang Seng up 1%, Shanghai up 0.8%, Singapore down 0.5%, and back home, KLCI down 1.1%.
And to dissect the market developments, we've got on the line with us Stephen Innes, the Global Chief Market Strategist for Axie. Now, Stephen, thank you for talking to us. Let's start with Malaysia. Now, the central bank meets this week. Are you expecting a rate cut from them? And how much dry powder does BNM have in order to address the effects of another MCO?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's been a shift in the dynamics where there are more economists factoring in a rate cut at this policy decision meeting. However, I think there's a couple of things we have to consider here, whether BNM will view a rate cut as being effective when the economy is still in lockdown. Generally, policy inputs are more favorable or received more favorable when people are out and about. These MCO restrictions, which have hobbled 85% of the market or 85% of mobility activity, is quite glaring. And obviously, there is going to be some necessity for monetary policy stimulus at some point. But is the urgency there to do it right now, especially on the back of the latest stimulus efforts, which in my view, take a little bit pressure off BNM to deliver a policy input. Really, you want to see how the vaccine evolves before, firing effectively what could be your last policy signal or policy bullet for the year. So I think there's going to be quite a bit of analysis on it. My view is they're not, but, I'm splitting hairs here. I think the eventuality will lead BNM to cut interest rates at some point this year.
And looking at paying attention to the U.S., right, I think it's pretty much certain that Janet Yellen looks certain to be the next U.S. Treasury Secretary. Now, do you think her policies are going to differ very much from Jerome Powell's at the Fed? Will we see, for a change, perhaps complementary fiscal and monetary stimulus then?
What's great about this duo is they very much align on familiar themes, especially around unemployment, and this is key. People discuss and pick away various elements within the economy, whether it's retail sales one day or whether it's industrial production the next. Those will all return as people start, mobility starts picking up. But what the glaring concern we have is whether all those jobs that have been replaced or lost or and now being replaced by automation are going to return. This is really important because, in my view, central banks are going to move on a tangent where income inequality and, basic standard of living for people are going to be a real focus. I think the pandemic itself brought light to this huge income disparity that's going on in the world right now. And I think this is going to be one of the policy puts that are going to be put in place by both U.S. Treasury and Chair Powell, where we're going to see interest rates stay very, very low for a long time.
Well, Stephen, given that the Fed is unlikely to do anything to prop up the weak greenback, which regional currencies are you bullish on? Will the ringgit be able to sustain its upward trend?
Well, there's nothing here that suggests that dollar Asia will not continue to strengthen, especially commodity currencies, because look, we're entering a period with hyper stimulus, which should lead to some semblance of hyperinflation, and that really plays out well for commodity, and you would think that the ringgit would trade well. However, there's a little bit of a pushback naturally from regional central bankers. The PBOC, for instance, has introduced macroprudential measures to tame, not necessarily stall the direction of travel for the yuan. They're trying to encourage more two-way flows. This is sort of weighing on sentiment. We've also seen a rapid hike in U.S. yields. And we're trying to figure out where those are going to stop going. And that's also taken a little bit of luster off the interest rate differential carry that was favoring the Malaysian ringgit. So I'm still relatively bullish on the ringgit going forward. However, I'm not as optimistic as I was per se, given the latest climate, given these extended MCO orders. You know, my targets come off a little bit. I was looking very bullish towards 360 level by year end 2021, but I'm pulling back to around the 685 level. That's the best I think we're going to get, provided oil prices continue to march higher.
Yeah, and Stephen, a quick sense from you in terms of the dollar's direction for 2021?
I think it's going to continue to weaken eventually. I think right now we're just going through the debate of whether when the Feds are going to taper. The fact is the Feds are not going to hike short-term interest rates. Foreign exchange trades off short-term interest rates. I think the huge deficits in the U.S. are going to pose a problem in the second half of the year for the dollar.
And Stephen, let's shift our attention to Thailand. Now, do you think Thai equities are set to continue the bullish trend that we saw in November 2020, or are you expecting some headwinds? I mean, are there any sectors that you're particularly expecting to outperform?
Well, you know, there's always headwinds because when there's COVID in the environment, but, you know, we're going to get the eventual rollout of vaccinations, and that's going to be, you know, the ultimate game changer when it comes to the travel. And I think this is why people are buying Thai equities, buying Thai bots, and even buying property in the region. It's starting to pick up. But, you know, it's always going to be a considerable challenge, you know, recovering from such an economic beatdown. I mean, will people really feel confident to travel internationally again, even with the safety of the vaccine? That's the big challenges that we're going to see. Very similar to whether people are even going to return to the CBDs again, for fear of perhaps a mutant virus coming around that these vaccines won't protect. There's going to be a lot to iron out, lots of wood to be chopped over the next couple of years before we really, really come back to any sense of pre-COVID normalcy, in my view.
So from the sounds of it, you do sound a bit of a Thai bear at this current moment. I mean, what kind of investment strategy would you advocate if you had to buy Thai stocks then?
Well, you know, I kind of always like anything linked to property markets for recovery. I think we're going to experience quite a hyperinflation move here. The only problem we have is that there's just a big glut of condos on the environment. If you can get into find some methodology to get into property, land ownership, that's probably a good way. The other sectors, I still like the undervalued sectors, even though the travel, tourist and travel area has sort of been knocked back. The government has done a relatively adequate job in bridging that gap by offering a lot of really good staycation policies where the locals have been taking advantage and to a degree have offset some of the downswing in the region. So I still remain quite favorable on those areas.
Okay, Stephen, always a pleasure talking to you. That was Stephen Ennis, Global Chief Market Strategist for Axie. Now, obviously, with the stimulus program, Joe Biden's, what, $1.9 trillion stimulus package on the cards, and low interest rates for much longer than expected, well, at least for 2021. That must bode well for Grab, I think, which is reportedly considering an IPO, not in Asia, but in America.
Well, I think that's on the back of the rebuffed Gojek and Tokopedia proposed advanced merger talks, right? Valuing it about $18 billion. So presumably Grab is basically trying to find a source of funding to basically compete with that mega rival.
Well, I think, you know, if you're a listed entity, you want as much visibility as possible, right? You want the interests of global fund managers who really have extremely deep pockets and maybe are willing to pay, I would say, very, attractive valuations, are willing to pay quite a lot of money for this kind of, I would say, disruptors in the region. So maybe that's why they're focusing on listing in the US versus, I think, original plans to list in this region.
Well, they might have been put off a little bit by the end financial repercussions as well. But, you know, look, I mean, this is all about timing, right? So Grab comes out at a time when they've got one of the digital bank licenses out of Singapore. And when you look at other...
super apps, that's the way to go,
well,
right?
Well, super apps, yeah. And then when you analyze other companies, which are Singapore listed, for example, C Limited, which controls Shopee e-commerce, right? Is very much in the same kind of like market vein, which is this whole 630 million population. You've got to imagine that Grab comes out ostensibly an $18 billion valuation. C is now what, 80 billion, right? That's four times where it is. That's interesting for the investors.
And there's a track record of very successful food delivery IPOs. Deliveroo based in London, and also DoorDash in US. They've all been performing very well. DoorDash's valuation is at $60 billion last week.
Yeah, DoorDash came out with, what, 4 million users officially, right, at the time of listing. Grab's got, what, I don't know, some quantum of magnitude higher than
that. If you ask me, I think they're all rushing to list because the work from home, the technology, all that's just really the key themes that we've seen make a lot of money for 2020. And I think it's going to continue in 2021.
And there's liquidity in the market.
Plenty, with interest rates.
Mop it all up.
With interest rates that are ultra low and basically money not earning any money in the bank. I mean, cash not earning anything in the bank.
Okay, well, from one hot sector to one which is not so hot, Tyson Group, the German steel conglomerate, considering a spin-off of its ailing steel business, lost almost 1 billion euros last year. Now, obviously, that plan has sent the group shares up by more than 7% because of the solution that might be presented.
Well, Thyssen, I think, has been suffering from these issues for quite a long time. I think they tried to have a tie-up with India's Tata in 2019, and that was blocked by the EU on the back of competition, antitrust probably. But they are looking at potential mergers with Sweden's SAB and even domestic rivals like Salzgitter, because that's been mooted. So, you know, it's like a combining of the tough assets together to try and find a way in these tough times.
And Xiaoling, it's not only those folks that are interested in the merger. UK industrial tycoon Sanjeev Gupta has also launched a bid, which the company is assessing. But workers' representatives have objected to the approach for fear of job losses.
Okay, up next, we're going to be discussing the 15 billion ringgit per mile package. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.